And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 24th, 2021. The Ministry of Health is considering closing down some private COVID testing laboratories around Juba Town.
It took them almost more than 3 days for them to respond to me after finding me that I was positive. So actually, this made me annoyed, and I was asking from them if they were really wanting to know if I was okay.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Talks between Sudan's transitional government and a faction of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement led by Abdulaziz Al-Hilu have stalled for more than 7 months over the question of state and religion. The mediators of the talks say they are working to bring back the parties to the negotiation table. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
In an exclusive interview, Amar Amona, the chief mediator for the SPLM North, said the Sudan talks became deadlocked last year when the parties could not reach agreement on whether or not to separate religion from the state.
Since August 2020, it was the session of 20th of August when we walked out. Since then, we have not had a formal, session of negotiation.
Amon, who also doubles as the Secretary General of the SPLM North, says Khartoum pulled out of the talks because it wanted time to consult over the rebel group's demand to establish a secular state. Sudan is currently a theocratic state. Sudanese Prime Minister Mohamed Hamdok and General Abdulaziz Al-Hilu tried to jumpstart the talks last September in Addis Ababa, but little progress has been achieved. Amon says since then, South Sudanese mediators have informed his group that consultations over the issue of religion and state are underway with the hope of resuming the talks soon. Amon says the parties made progress on other issues since the talks began in late December 2019.
In broad categories, we agreed in as principles how wealth should be shared, and also the division of the country into states instead of regions instead of states, and also the division of powers. We have agreed to either decentralization or federal system.
The parties also agreed to develop a permanent constitution for Sudan and agreed that the Sudanese government would endorse key international human rights covenants, including one on women's and child rights. Al-Hilu's SPLM North faction was not part of the Sudan peace deal signed last year in Juba between the Sudan government and the Sudan Revolutionary Front, or SRF, a coalition of at least 9 rebel groups, including opposition parties. Amon says that agreement did not address the key issue of whether to make Sudan a secular state. For the SPLM North, that issue is non-negotiable, according to Amon. He says if the government refuses to turn Sudan into a secular state, the party will opt for self-determination.
We will never back down from it, because we will never be under Sharia law, whatever happens. So this is our position, no matter what government proposes. And we are waiting for the government of Sudan to respond. We will never be ruled by Sharia anymore, because we have been victims of the Sharia throughout 37 years of war.
War broke out between Khartoum and the SPLM North in 2011 after South Sudan gained its independence and former Sudan President Omar El-Bashir tried to disarm rebel forces. The military ousted Bashir following the Sudanese revolution. Amon claims the SPLM North controls 80% of southern Kordofan and a considerable section of the Blue Nile region, an area bigger than Rwanda and Burundi put together. Ramadan Gotch, a member of the South Sudanese team mediating the talks, confirms efforts are underway to bring the parties back to the negotiating table.
We are still working for it to resume. So there is some discussions between the government and mediation and those who are still in North. When finalized, we will let you know.
8 years of talks and 22 rounds of African Union-led mediation during Bashir's regime failed to resolve the conflict before South Sudan took over as mediators of the talks in Juba. Amon says he hopes the two parties will reach an agreement and notes there are some bilateral engagements between the leadership of the Sudanese government and that of the SPLM North. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The former chairman of the Bari Village Development Committee in Central Equatoria State is warning land grabbers to stop forceful occupation of lands in and around Juba Town. Martin Swaka says he is leading a process to take land grabbers to the East African Court of Justice for arbitration because the government of South Sudan has done very little to address land grabbing in and around Juba Town.
83 there. Despite that, they were having their own challenges. But one of the things that they have really tried their best is really to bring some kind of systems, rule of law in the country. And people at that time, whether you are coming from which community, whether you are coming from which state or from which area in Juba, if you go to the land department and you apply that you want a plot to reside in Juba, your name will be registered. And in due time, John, you'll be given a plot free. And you will stay in that plot without any problem. There was a system set and everybody was following the system. And there was some kind of a semblance of rule of law that there's nobody who was taking the law into their hand to go and confiscate somebody's properties, including land and other things. I want to tell you, John, and I want to say it here, let everybody hear it. Even senior people from other communities of South Sudan, especially, I want to be blunt here, the board enter, who are now leading this massive land grabbing around the areas in Juba and Juba Town, their leaders who were in the government of Abilalair and before, they were all given plots. They were given plots in strategic places in town. And when the SPLM war started, they left Juba and they left all this property. Some of them built houses in these plots. Others left it actually empty. I want to tell you, John, when they came back after the CPA agreement, they found their land. Others have already actually grown bushy. The houses were old. Nobody actually touched them. And they just came back and entered into their plots and started developing it again. Nobody actually touched it. If people were to have this spirit of grabbing land, of grabbing the people's properties, I'm very sure these people who came back again after the signing of CPA, they wouldn't have actually found any plot for them in Juba. But they found everything up there, the property that they left there intact. Nobody touched it. Or this new practice that is happening now, John, for me, I will just say it is just because of the vacuum of the law, the lawlessness that we have in South Sudan, that we have today. It is because of this situation that the minorities communities in South Sudan are suffering today. The minority communities in South Sudan are suffering today. It is not in Juba alone. News are coming from places like, wow. News are coming from places like Malakal. The communities are suffering and their land and their areas are being confiscated, occupied, and they have been displaced from these areas.
If it's that simple to get a plot of land in Juba, why is it very difficult to get a plot? I mean, I hear a lot of complaints from 2005 today that it's not easy to get a plot in Juba.
I want to tell you, our communities even around Juba have actually done some survey and demarcation and allocated over 5,000 pieces of plots to people who are coming to Juba free. Because the plots are given to the ministry once you do the demarcation and with the coordination of coordination with the ministry, with the Department of the Land in the state. Once the survey is done, the government will always ask for certain percentage of this plot to be given to them, so that they can be able to give to anybody who will be applying in order to get a plot. And that's always happened. John Taban, To be frank with you, the current situation in South Sudan in terms of the governance system in South Sudan, the governance system or the government in South Sudan is not really in the situation where they can really put things in control. The situation is very fluid in the country.
What do you mean by the situation is fluid? Can you explain?
The current government in South Sudan is not really in the position that they can be able to bring things under control. And that is the reason, John, a lot of people are already calling, whether they are international observers, South Sudanese themselves, intellectual, political leaders, they are already calling for a change in the country. There must be a political change in the country in order to bring a new political dispensation in the country that can now really be able to set, you know, a government that will be responsive, you know, to the needs of the people.
You sound like you have your personal problem with the government of the day in South Sudan, and hence you are releasing your anger because of these land issues. But try to talk to me. What is the problem?
South Sudan must have a federal system of government where, in terms of the resources and in terms of the power, it can be devalued so that people can be able to govern themselves where they are. And all this issue that everybody want to come to the capital where they can now be able to get everything free from the capital will never happen. They will now be in their own states, in their own counties, in their own payams. The power will be there for them. The resources will be there. They will also set up a system where now they want to govern themselves in peace. And then they can now be able to develop their own areas without actually, thinking of going to other areas where they go there and they find themselves in the situation where they don't have resources. They don't have, and then they start thinking of illegal way of getting resources.
That's Martin Swaka, former chairperson of the Bari Community Village Development Committee. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, last week. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a general in the South Sudan Army denies committing atrocities after being sanctioned by the European Union. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you break bad news?
I break bad news looking at the person's mood as at that moment, whether to tell the person or not. And if you are telling the person, how would the person take it at that moment you are telling the person?
I think when you need to talk about something difficult, you just need to come right out and do it. So if it's bad news, I think just go right ahead and let it be known and say what you have to say and just figure out how to get over it.
Break bad news to people in a gradual process, because most of the times bad news come as a form of a shock to people. So you break it in a form of a gradual process by saying it in parables or using illustrations.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A South Sudanese military general sanctioned this week by the European Union for human rights violations in Central Equatorial State denies the accusations. The EU's global human rights sanction regime accused General Gabriel Moses Lokujo for being involved in extrajudicial summary or arbitrary execution and killings in Kajukiji County. For VOA News, Onan Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
The Council of the European Union said Monday in a report published in their official journal that its commander, SPLMIO Major General Lokujo, was responsible for the ensuing clashes between government and SPLMIO forces in and around the Morota Training Center in southern central Equatoria. The Council says several people were killed or injured on both sides during the last quarter of 2020 and that many civilians were displaced, especially in the Kajukaji County. In an exclusive phone interview with South Sudan in Focus on Tuesday, Major General Lokujo said it is better the council ask First Vice President Riek Machar about atrocities committed since he is the chairperson of the SPLMIO. He also called the allegations baseless.
The accuser can produce enough evidence to show that the atrocities they have done is true. I, the only commander in Yei River State when commanding the forces of IO, so why should they put my name there when there are some senior commanders who are responsible even because in army you only implement orders?
In May 2020, three SPLMIO officers were abducted and executed on the orders of Major General Lokujo, according to the EU report. Colonel Lampol Gabriel is the army spokesperson for the SPLMIO.
Before his defection in 2020, Moses Lokujo was brought to Juba for investigation into the alleged crime of executing three of our senior officers, and that is two brigadiers and one colonel. But when he came to Juba, and while the investigation was ongoing, he decided to defect to the SSPDF, and that led to the violence that took place afterwards in Morota Training Center.
Lokujo denies he ordered the execution of the three SPLMIO officers.
I'm not aware of that three officers. Because if you are talking of three officers, is it only three officers who have died in this whole war from 2013 to 2020? If these people are against the peace that is going on in South Sudan, and they are jeopardizing the peace of South Sudan, we are thinking they could relieve the sanctions on South Sudan, instead they are also increasing the sanctions of South Sudan, which means they are jeopardizing the peace of South Sudan. And my message to them, our solution in Africa, or our solution in South Sudan, is the people of South Sudan, not outside that.
The EU Council says under the EU Global Human Rights Sanctions Regime, the sanctions signal the EU's strong determination to stand up for human rights and to take tangible action against those responsible for violations and abuses. Under the Monisky Act established on December 7th, 2020, General Lokujo, along with other individuals listed in the report, are subject to an asset freeze in the EU, a travel ban to the EU. In addition, people in the European Union are banned from making funds available, either directly or indirectly, to those listed. Lokujo says he is not concerned about the asset freeze or the travel ban.
As a citizen of South Sudan, I'm also not, I don't have any traveling permit that I can travel out of my country, since if I am not even a member of the European Union, it will not affect me. And if they will come and freeze my animals at the home, eat chicken or goats, that is when they will come and freeze. But I don't have any bank account. Of course, if I don't have a bank account, they will not break anything.
Lokujo is one of 11 individuals globally sanctioned by the European Union. More than 10 South Sudanese government officials, including former Minister of Defense and Veteran Affairs Kwol Manyang Jok, Minister of Cabinet Affairs Martin Elialomoro and Information Minister Michael Makwe have been sanctioned for various rights violations since the outbreak of the conflict in 2013. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
South Sudan's task force on COVID-19 is considering shutting down more private laboratories conducting COVID-19 tests after several people complain of irregularities in the test results. The management of MediBlue, one of the private laboratories licensed to conduct tests for COVID-19, says the lab sticks to highest standards of the World Health Organization, the Center for Disease Control, and the National Health Ministry. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Several people have complained that they were given false positive COVID-19 results, saying when they were tested elsewhere, their results were negative. Juba resident Teresa Jeremiah says she does not understand why some private laboratories take so long to release COVID-19 test results.
It took them almost more than 3 days for them to respond to me after finding me that I was positive. So actually, this made me annoyed, and I was asking from them if they were really wanting to know if I was okay, or they just wanted to confirm that I was dead, because there is no way you can find someone or get to know that someone is positive and you don't get to follow up the second day or the third day at least.
Jeremiah says when results take 3 days or more, the patient may end up infecting family and friends without knowing. Juba resident Songa David says he tested positive for coronavirus after he was named as a contact to a family member who wanted to travel. He says he contacted the government-owned public health laboratory. He says he contacted the government-owned public health laboratory to get himself and family members tested.
I decided to call the public lab and invite them over to come and test us to see if we all are victims. Mm. However, they told me they have run out of the testing kits, so I will have to wait until they get more testing kits. They gave me 3 days. I waited for the 3 days. I called back. Still, they couldn't make it. So I was forced to go and do a test in a private facility.
David says MedBlue was charging $42 for his test and $100 to test his wife, since she is a foreign national, which he said was far too expensive. As a result, David just assumed everyone in his family was positive and began self-isolating.
So I was asked to isolate for like 14 days. We isolated for the 14 days. After the 14 days, I also called the public lab. Mm. Surprisingly, they told me still they couldn't come and test. They asked whether I was symptomatic, which I said no. They just said, yes, they can give me a document that clears that I've finished the 14 days of quarantine, but they couldn't come and test me. They don't have the equipment to come and test me.
David says he got a second confirmation test at a private clinic called Queen's Clinic. Dr. Loku, the incident manager for COVID-19 at the Health Ministry and a member of the National Task Force on COVID-19, says private laboratories are taking advantage of the situation in South Sudan to make money from the public. He says every patient who tests positive in a private clinic must do a confirmation test at the public lab for free and stop hiding due to the stigma surrounding COVID-19.
Come to the public health, come to the public health so that we confirm it to you and we make sure. Because also we have seen people who claim to, they have gone for private, they tested positive, they went to another private, tell him that is negative. And he start wondering, why are we? We tell you, come here with these guys. I was told I was positive. I want to know this. Because most of this information, we don't know. And the private, some of them are taking less an advantage. They ask them to come back for another test because of the money, and they get drained outside there.
Dr. Lako says the task force is considering closing some of the private clinics that do not meet COVID-19 testing standards.
We're actually going to decide to close some of these labs because what they are costing us, not only they are costing us a lot of problems because they're introducing a lot of risk. And the risks that are there, nobody knows, and these people continue to spread the infection.
Dr. Philip Katjok, a laboratory expert at MedBlue, says the lab adheres to the highest standards of the World Health Organization, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, and National Health Ministry in regards to hiring qualified technical staff and using certified equipment.
Even our reagent has been adopted by the public health lab. because it has a quality. It is very sensitive, very specific. Very sensitive, it means that it detects the lowest concentration of the reagent, so this it would not miss positive cases.
There are 860 positive COVID-19 cases under follow-up to date, with 107 deaths. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Still on COVID, research is ongoing, but it's thought the coronavirus, which causes COVID-19, may be a zoonotic disease that first appeared in bats. A team in the Philippines studies disease carried by bats in hopes of preventing future pandemics. VOA's Arish Arabsati has more.
Nighttime in the Philippines. A team of scientists using nets captures a wild bat which receives an impromptu medical screening. Scientists swab the animal's mouth, take measurements, and inspect the wings.
What we're trying to look into are other strains of coronavirus that have the potential to jump to humans.
Bat ecologist Philip Alviola with the University of the Philippines is on the research team studying bats and zoonotic diseases. The very nature of their work puts them at risk of contagion. They use the data collected from health screening bats to create a simulation model.
If we know the virus itself and where we know where it came from, we know how to isolate that virus geographically. So we can implement some restriction, travel restrictions. We can prevent city to city, province to province transmission.
The model projects how time, climate, and temperature may affect the transmission of disease from bats to humans. The International Union for Conservation of Nature says there are more than 1,200 species of bats, and at least 78 of them live in the Philippines. The World Health Organization and others have been studying whether the coronavirus pandemic started in bats because the virus has a similar makeup to others that the flying mammals are known to carry. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. Let's know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We now leave you with this song, Loso. This one goes out to our listeners in Nimule Town who love Motarere. We have been listening to that beautiful melody from Nimule. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places to protect you and others from COVID-19. do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Tell the way you were to the